We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past and smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thank you, Dave, and again, welcome to Yesteryear. On today's program, a couple of real treats for you. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll head off to Broadway and the First Nighter with Help Wanted Female. But first, it's the Bud Abbott and Lou Costello Show. Abbott and Costello, remembered primarily as a movie team, got their first shove toward stardom in radio and stayed with the medium through the 1940s as their fame as film comics was at its height. They brought an old-style vaudeville slapstick to radio, a stand-up comedy that consisted mainly of short skits involving clever plays on words. Signed by Universal Pictures in 1939, they almost single-handedly bailed the financially troubled studio out of the red. Their first regular radio show was heard in October of 1942, continuing for 5 years on NBC as a Thursday night feature. Consistently heard by more than 20 million listeners, it supplemented such films as Buck Privates and In the Navy, keep their names constantly at the top of the zany comic heap. On today's program, the boys learn a bit of class on Charm School. Next on this edition of Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent. Then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on Jack Armstrong, Merton Marr, Jameis, and Andy.
Costello program. Listen to the great rhythms of Will Osborne at his orchestra, the swingy singing of Connie Haynes, and that gallant, chubby little gentleman who, when he walked into Hedy Lamarr's dressing room by mistake, politely said,
"Hey, Costello, what are you so excited about? What's the matter with you?"
"I don't know, Abbott. I'm all mixed up. In my room, I got a big picture of Lauren Bacall on the ceiling.
Yes.
And on my dresser, I got a picture of Rita Hayworth. On the walls, I got two pictures of Betty Grable. And under my pillow, I got a picture of Dorothy Lamour in a sarong. And I think I'm going nuts."
"Why?"
"All night long, I keep dreaming of Gene Autry's horse."
"Look, talk sense, Costello. What were you doing in the courthouse this morning?"
"Oh, I was there to see my Uncle Artie Stebbins get his divorce."
"Was it an interesting divorce trial?"
"Oh, sure. The judge said, 'Mr. Stebbins, I'm granting you a divorce, and I'm going to give your wife $35 a week.'"
"What did Artie say to that?"
"He said, 'That's mighty nice of you, Judge. I'll try to slip her a buck every now and then myself.'"
"Now, Lou, that was ridiculous. What were the grounds for the divorce?"
"Misrepresentation. She said that before they were married, Uncle Artie told her he was well off."
"Well, was he?"
"He was, but he didn't know it then."
"Well, she must have had better grounds than that. What else did she claim?"
"Well, she wanted to get rid of him because he was always getting indifferent."
"Artie was getting indifferent?"
"Yeah, he was getting in different girls' apartments every night."
"Oh, stop that nonsense, please."
"I'm glad I went to the trial, though, Abbott. I found out what causes 100% of the divorce cases.
So you know what causes all the divorces?
Yep.
What?
Marriage?
Oh. You know nothing about marriage, Costello. Marriage is a great institution.
Yeah, but who wants to live in an institution?
Costello, marriage is wonderful.
Yeah, marriage is like a three-ring circus.
A three-ring circus?
Yep. Engagement ring, marriage ring, and suffering.
But how can you
banana!
Talk... Never mind.
No, I'm lost already.
All right. How can you talk like that, Costello? You've never been a husband. In fact, you don't even know what a husband is.
Oh, yes, I do.
Oh, all right. What is a husband?
A husband is what's left of a sweetheart after the nerve has been killed.
Oh. Costello, you're a dope. But you don't have to worry about marriage. Very few women would marry you.
Very few would be enough.
Well, but what happened to that girl you used to go with? Ruby Poolcue. I thought you two were engaged.
We was, Abbott.
You were?
But I broke it off. I told her to keep the ring.
You mean you were willing to lose an expensive diamond engagement ring?
That's right. What's a buck and a half to a man with a broken heart? Ruby went ahead and she married Stinky Rappaport.
Stinky Rappaport?
Stinky Rappaport. I gave them a beautiful set of silver.
Table silver?
No, pocket silver. 4 dimes and a quarter.
Talk sense, Costello. Why don't you try to meet some nice girl and go steady?
Oh, Abbott, I met one last night in the movies. And I took her out. She was an usher.
Oh, you mean she's an usherette?
What?
Usherette.
Yeah, she ate and she drank. She ate like a horse. She had a nose bag with her.
All right, never mind.
You know, we had a wonderful time,
Abbott. You did?
Then I took her home and we sat in a parlor. Just the two of us.
Oh, it must have been romantic.
Romantic. We sat on the sofa and I read her a love story. Then suddenly she reached over and switched off the light.
What did you do?
I turned it on again. Who can read in the dark?
Oh. What a guy. You're in the parlor with a beautiful girl and you read a book. Why don't you take her to a dance?
Oh, I'm all through with dances.
What do you mean?
I took Cleopatra to a dance last night.
Cleopatra.
Last week.
Cleopatra?
Yep.
You idiot. Cleopatra has been dead for 2,000 years.
No wonder she couldn't rumba.
Costello.
Spelled backwards or something else.
All right. Look, Costello, why don't you try to make a hit with that little girl my wife introduced to you? You know,
Odessa,
Sweetwater.
Sweetwater?
Yeah.
I had to give her up, Abbott.
Why?
Her father didn't like me.
Her father wanted you to marry her.
I said he didn't like me.
Her father said he'd pay half your expenses if you got married.
Yeah, but who's going to pay the other half?
Costello, you're always thinking about money. When I got married, I was just a struggling young actor. Struggling, I will
Sometimes
get out.
Sometimes I get lost.
Yes.
You don't know where you are.
Well... I was still struggling.
Thank you. And how you were struggling.
I struggled.
I know you struggled, but you didn't get away.
Ah, no, Costello. You're an imbecile. You lose all your girls. Look, what happened to your engagement to Tessie Tinfoil?
It's broken.
Did you break it?
Nope.
Did she break it?
Nope.
Then how did it get broken?
Well, Tessie told me what her clothes cost, and I told her what my salary was. And when the engagement just sort of sagged in the middle and busted by itself...
Costello.
Both of us better get glasses.
Costello, how did you happen to meet Tessie Tinfoil in the first place?
Well, I went down to the bank and drew out my money.
Yes.
There she was. 5 minutes later, we were engaged.
You asked the girl to marry you, and you only knew her 5 minutes?
That's right. Abbott, you'd be amazed what you can do when you meet somebody if you don't waste time shaking hands.
Costello, what became of Tessie Tinfoil?
Oh, Tessie's an MP in the Navy.
An MP in the Navy? What does she do?
She keeps the wolves away from the waves.
Costello, what? Why aren't you more like your brother Pat? Now, there's a happily married man. Why, I heard Pat's wife say she couldn't wait to hear the patter of little feet around the house.
Well, Abbott, your information, it won't be long now.
You mean?
Yep. Pat's taken up tap dancing.
Oh, Costello, you're hopeless.
What's wrong with that?
Now, wait a minute. You don't even know how to look at a girl.
I don't... Hello? Yes. There is. That's awful. That guy ought to be ashamed of himself. Oh, that's terrible. Goodbye.
Who is that?
The police department. They're after a peeping Tom who's been looking into the chorus girls' dressing rooms over Earl Carroll's theater from the roof of this building.
Boy, I'd hate to be in that guy's shoes when them cops get through with him.
Yep. I gotta go now, Abbott. See you later.
Wait a minute. Where are you going?
I'm gonna sell my binoculars.
Get him out of here.
Camel presents Will Osborne now with an arrangement of a current favorite, Candy.
I've arranged a wonderful date for you. My wife fixed it up for you to take our girlfriend out. Emma Fiddlebuster.
Emma Fiddlebuster? Mm-hmm. Not me, Abbott. I took that dame to a restaurant once, and on the way out, the manager searched me.
Well, Costello, you have an honest face. Why did the manager search you?
Well, he took one look at Emma Fiddlebuster, and he said, if you'll walk out of here with her, you're liable to walk out of here with anything.
Oh, how can you say that, Costello? Emma is a blonde, and you'd go out with any blonde.
I would not.
Name one.
Nelson Eddy.
Oh. Quiet, Costello. Hey. Here comes Emma now. Oh, good evening, Miss Fiddlebuster.
Hello, Bud.
I believe you know my partner, Lou Costello.
Why, yes. It seems to be I met you someplace before, Mr. Costello.
Oh, I don't think so. I never go to the zoo. Get the kisser on this kid.
Oh, now I remember. You annoyed me one whole evening.
I never even looked at you.
Well, isn't that annoying?
And if I remember correctly, you winked at me with your good eye. That's one in the middle.
Did I try to kiss you?
No.
Well, then it wasn't me. Tell me, Costello, don't I do something to you?
Yes. When I look at you, I turn gray as a sheet.
Costello, I think you mean white as a sheet.
Abbott, you ain't seen our laundry lately.
Oh. Costello, why don't you like me? I've been told that I'm beautiful. Why, Lana Turner and I are sisters under the skin.
Well, crawl back under the skin and send out Lana, kid.
Oh, let me out of here. Goodbye.
Well, Costello, what do you think of Miss Fiddlebuster? Well, what do you think?
I'll tell you what I think. Abbott, if you want to get me a date, why don't you ask Connie Haynes to go out with me? She's wonderful. I love her voice.
Connie has a grand voice. Do you like her range?
Like her range? I like her whole kitchen.
Well, look, I'll get you a date with Connie Haynes on one condition. You must promise not to kiss her, because if you kiss her, her mother will worry.
Okay, Abbott, I won't kiss her. I'll let her kiss me. Let my mother worry.
I mean, no wonder girls won't go out with you.
Is that so? I know how to treat a girl, Abbott. First, I buy her flowers and candy.
And then?
Then I take her to a show, and then I take her to a cabaret. I spend $7 or $8. Then we walk along until we meet a sailor.
Then what?
Oh, I can always find my own way home.
Well, Costello, I'm going to arrange you to take Connie Haynes to a nightclub. But first, I must be sure you will conduct yourself like a gentleman. Come with me.
Where are we going?
I'm going to put you through a complete course of social etiquette at the charm school. Come on, let's go. Well, here we are at the charm school.
What took us so long?
Give us music, will you?
Boom, boom. That's it.
All right.
And I'm out of breath.
Come on, we're here just the same.
Oh, welcome, welcome to my school, gentlemen. I am Professor Melonhead. Gentlemen, I teach charm.
Abbott, get me out of here. This guy couldn't charm a snake.
Quiet, Costello.
Young man, I'll have you know that I do teach charm.
Why, with that head, you should be teaching billiards. Hand me a cue, Abbott, and I'll run snooker with his dome.
No. Take it easy, Costello. Professor Mellonhead is an expert at etiquette.
I know he etiquette.
You know what?
I know he etiquette. You can see he etiquette. He's still got the tail on his upper lip.
I see.
Now, you quiet, you obese buffoon.
Continue.
All right. My high forehead denotes intelligence, brains. My boy, that's where I shine.
Well, why don't you take some of the shine off your head and put it on your shoes? From behind your skull looks like an empty parking lot.
Costello, will you behave yourself?
Now, tut, tut, let me handle him, Mr. Abbott. I'll transform this boy into a perfect gentleman. Now, our first lesson here in charm is how to behave at home. Costello, what would you do when the butler enters the room?
We ain't got no butler in my house.
No butler? My dear boy, if you have no butler, how do you know when dinner is ready?
When my mother takes the iron bars off the dining room door.
Oh. And then you eat.
Not until she opens up the vault door to get you into the kitchen.
And then you eat.
Then we eat because I'm filled up. Go ahead, continue.
All right, never mind that. Now, we'll say that you're already in the dining room. Now, what do you do with the crumbs at the table?
Crumbs?
Certainly. Don't you have crumbs at your table?
Oh, yeah. Abbott comes once a week. Hey, you're welcome anytime. You can come.
Oh, never mind. We'll skip the crumbs, Costello. Now, let's say that you have on your plate a slice of roast beef with gravy, some pickled beets, and a lovely portion of beans. Now, which fork do you use?
I don't use no fork.
No fork?
No, I just slip my lower lip under the plate and bank the beans off the pickled beets.
Oh. That's fine. Now, we'll suppose, Costello, we'll suppose that you're in a very swanky continental bistro. Now, you walk
Would
in...
Would you read that again, please?
Oh, you're in a swanky continental bistro.
Excuse me, continue.
All right. You... Come on, you saunter up to the bar with savoir-faire and distingué.
How did I ever get mixed up with those characters?
No. That's the way you walk. Now, you order a liqueur. The waiter walks up and slips you a pussy café.
He wouldn't dare. He hasn't got the nerve.
All right, now, suddenly, at the next table behind you, you see a beautiful girl. My assistant here will help us out by playing the part of the beautiful girl. This is Mademoiselle Zing Zing.
Zing Zing?
Zing Zing.
A zing 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 zing. A zing 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 zing.
All right, quiet, Costello.
Zing 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 zing. That's the only line the guy's got.
I've got to have a bouncer. Now, be quiet. Now, Costello, after the girl walks up in a very soigné manner, you approach Mademoiselle Zing Zing, and in perfect French, you say, Pardonne-moi, mademoiselle. Voulez-vous promenade du boulevard, rue Montmartre de Boulogne, Champs-Élysées?
I say that?
Of course.
And what does she say?
She answers you in a lovely, melodious voice.
Je vous ai, je vous aime, je vous adore.
I'd like to meet you by the gas pipe.
Allez, boum, pou pou, petite parmite.
Gee, that sounds swell. Petit mieux, pou pou, petit pommier. What does that mean?
Hit the road, chump. The big guy is my husband.
Now, just a minute, Melonhead. You've gone too far.
What's the matter, Costello?
Well, I mean, after all, Abbott, I didn't mind it when this melon guy forced me to walk into a stanky confidential biscuit. I didn't say nothing when he pushed me onto that Savoy Ferry in a distinct way. I never said a word when he had the way to shove a pussycat's face in my hand. But when he makes me poo-poo petite marquise between that lovely girl and her husband, he has not only impugned on my good name, but he has cast aspirations on the San Francisco Conference.
For Camel fans tonight, lovely Connie Haynes introduces a brand new song. It's Freddie Martin's latest composition, and this will be the first public performance of it anywhere. We hope you will like Hubba Hubba Hoy.
Every time the lights are low and you start to kiss me, oh, whoa, boy, a hubba 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 hoy. Every time our fingers touch, I begin to shake so much. Whoa, boy, a hubba 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 hoy. When you get that starry gaze, my eyes begin to leak. I go in a kind of daze and my heart starts to pound. made the whole thing out. Even in my sleep I shout, whoa, boy, a hubba, 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 hoy. Every time our fingers touch, I begin to shake so much.
Oh, boy!
A hubba, 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 hoy. When you get that starry gaze, my eyes begin to leap. I go in a kind of daze, and my heart starts to pound like a G. I can't make the whole thing out. Even in my sleep I shout,
oh boy,
oh boy, a hubba, 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 hoy.
Abbott, well, what are we doing up here at this joint?
Costello, I've made a date with Connie Haynes and me this year. And it's not a joint. It's the Ritz, a very high-class nightclub.
Hey, Abbott, this place is a fake. They got a sign over there over the bar that says, ladies served here.
Well?
Well, I went over to the bar and ordered a lady and they threw me out.
Oh. Costello, I've met a lot of morons in my time, but you're head and shoulders above all of them.
Abbott, you must have met a bunch of short morons.
No, never mind that. Did you bring plenty of money with you?
Oh, yes, I did. I'm loaded, Abbott. Right here in my pocket, I got $4, all in singles. If I fold one over, it'll look like five.
Now, you mean to say that you left the house with $4?
Yeah.
Aren't you afraid to carry that kind of money around with you?
Well, at first you get kind of a funny feeling. You imagine everybody's looking at you. But you get used to it. The big trick is not to try to look nervous.
$4. Come on, sport. Let's go in and don't forget to tip the doorman.
Good evening, gentlemen. Allow me to open the door for you.
Oh, thank you, Mac. Here's a dime tip for you.
Costello, how can you stand there and face that doorman after giving him a dime?
I'm waiting for my change.
Oh! Come on! All right, Costello, there's the head waiter. Now, if you want a good table, close to the dance floor, you'll have to give him a big tip.
Good evening, gentlemen. Would you like a table?
Oh, yes, my good man. We're heavy spenders. Here's a nice tip for you.
But this is a quarter. Didn't you make a mistake, sir?
I guess I did. I thought it was a nickel. Give me that back. Here you are, 5 pennies.
This is an insult. Why, the champion tightwad of Hollywood gave me 50 cents.
Well, meet the new champion.
Mr. Headwaiter, could you give us a nice ringside table?
Oh, sure. Follow me.
Hey, Abbott, I'm getting tired. Can't we sit down here and rest for a few minutes?
Not at that table. It's reserved.
Sign over there, Los Angeles City Limits.
Here you are, gentlemen. Here's your table. On a clear day, you can see Catalina.
All right, Costello, you sit here, facing the dance floor.
Okay, but I'm liable to catch cold with my back toward the ocean.
Well?
What was that?
A Greyhound bus.
I wondered why they had a white line running down the middle of the table.
Would you two mugs like to order some food? The roast beef is delicious.
How much is it?
It's $4 a portion, but it's lovely roast beef. It will make your mouth water.
That's what we want.
Roast beef?
No, water.
Happy New Year. Hey, fellas, do you mind if I sit at your table?
Just a minute, partner. Where are you from?
I'm from Chicago.
Chicago?
Toledo.
Well, why don't you take a train and go home?
Well, I would, but my wife won't let me keep it in the house.
Aha! There you are, you cheapskate.
Oh, yeah, you can't talk to me like that.
Oh, no. I'll take care of you.
Oh, oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, no! Oh, no! Hey, waiter, what's the idea of throwing that poor guy out like that?
What's the idea?
Yeah?
Why, his bill was $76 and all the cheapskate had was $75.40. Imagine the nerve of him trying to get away with a thing like that.
Yeah, he certainly got a lot of nerve trying to get away with that. Hey, yeah, but how much is our bill?
I don't know. We haven't got it yet.
Oh, I beg your pardon. Are you like Lou Costello?
That's me.
Here's a telegram for you.
Thanks. Hey, messenger girl, you forgot your motorcycle.
Oh, so I did.
She writes fast, don't she? Oh, boy. Hey, Abbott, here's a telegram. Look what it says. It's from Connie Haynes.
What does she say?
She says, "Dear Mr. Costello, just arrived here at the club. And I'm on my way to your table. Expect to be there within the next hour or two." Hey, Abbott, we got to stop Connie. We can't let her come in a place like this. It would cost her a fortune.
Well, here you are, gentlemen. I thought maybe you'd like to pay your check.
How much is the check, Abbott?
$83.
$83?
Mm-hmm.
And I only got $4. And the other guy was only 60 cents short. Look what they did to him. Abbott, we got to do something quick.
Costello, this is your party, and you'll have to get out of it the best way you can.
I got an idea. You offer to pay the check, and I'll give you an argument.
Okay, I get you. Come on. Costello, I'll pay the check.
No, Abbott. I couldn't think of letting you pay the check.
But I insist on paying the check.
You are not going to pay this check, Abbott. I'm going to pay it myself.
I wish you'd let me pay it.
Well, somebody better pay it.
Mr. Waiter, does it make any difference to you who pays the check?
It don't make any difference to me. I don't care who pays the check.
Okay, here, Waiter, pay it yourself. Come on, Abbott.
Right,
let's get out of here.
We didn't make it.
Abbott and Costello will be back for Camel Cigarettes in just a moment. And I'll hear Bud and Lou with the final word.
Well, Costello, the Andrews sisters are going to be our guests next week. Have you made any plans to entertain them?
Oh, sure, Abbott. I thought I'd take them over to my house and cook up a batch of snoo.
What's new?
Nothing much. What's new with you?
Oh, get him out of here. Good night, folks.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Yes, folks, be sure to tune in next week for another great Abbott and Costello show brought to you by Camel Cigarettes. And remember, Camels are worth asking for every time. See for yourself how Camel's mildness, coolness, and flavor click with you.
Bud Abbott and Lou Costello in Charm School. Well, if the boys weren't enough to charm your socks off, hopefully this next program will. It's the First Nighter presenting Help Wanted Female, starring Barbara Luddy and Olin Soule, next on Yesteryear.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
The First Nighter program was the earliest and one of the last of the significant dramatic playhouses of the air. Coming to NBC for Campana Balm in December of 1930, the show kept its sponsor through three changes of network. In Depression America, Broadway was far too expensive for the average American pocketbook. Little matter, though, the First Nighter took us there. Built around the concept of an opening night on Broadway, the format was one of the greatest ever devised. The show was done in typical theater fashion in three acts. The genial host was seldom identified in the credits. Charles Hughes was an early First Nighter, followed by McDonald Carey during the time of 1938-39, and was also briefly played by Brent Morrison and Marvin Miller. By the mid-1940s, Rye Billsbury had become the permanent First Nighter. On today's program, the Little Theater off Times Square presents Help Wanted Female from January of 1948, starring Barbara Luddy and Olin Soule with William Conrad. Here now is the First Nighter program from Yesteryear.
Campana's First Nighter program. From the Little Theater off Times Square. Starring Barbara Luddy and Olin Soule, with an all-star cast sent to you by Campana, the quality name in cosmetics. It's theater time on the Great White Way, and you are cordially invited to attend the premiere of a new play on Broadway. Here's the night that brings patrons of the arts and the top draw of society to the theater. A veritable who's who parade. And now, here is your host for the evening, the genial First Nighter.
Good evening, everybody. This promises to be one of the most exciting nights of the theater season, so let's lose no time in getting to the opening. Here's my cab. Won't you step in? All right, driver, we're off. Up Broadway across 42nd Street. And here is the famous Crossroads of America. Up ahead there, where the lights are brightest, is the little theater off Times Square. Well, here we are.
Smoking codfish, I never saw so many beautiful women. Phew, they sure got the magic touch.
Have your tickets ready, please. Have your tickets ready, please.
Good evening, Mr. First Nighter. The usher will show you to your seats.
Thank you. We'll go right in. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're all comfortably seated and we just have time to look at the theater program. Well, here's a notice right on the front cover of the program. It says, attention, listen after Act One tonight for news about Magic Touch. You'll hear all about it at the end of Act One. And now let's see about tonight's play. It's another original called Help Wanted Female. The author is Floyd Miller, and the co-stars that talented pair, Barbara Luddy and Olin Soule. Miss Luddy will play the part of Pam, a young lady in need of a job. Mr. Soule is cast as Andy, a publicity expert. And I see many top names in the supporting cast, William Conrad, Polly Bear, and others of equal fame. But now, with First Curtain coming up soon, let's listen to Frank Worth and the famous First Nighter Orchestra. There's the signal for First Curtain. The house lights are out, and here's the play.
The whole thing started last summer when I was unemployed. Each morning I would buy the newspaper, mark the likely jobs in the want ad section, then run my legs off from one side of Manhattan to the other, trying to beat 100 other girls to the personnel managers. I wasn't doing so well until the morning I saw the following ad. It was under Help Wanted Female. And it read, administrative assistant to wealthy philanthropist. Must have executive ability. Be able to organize office, handle people. Salary in upper brackets for right person. Apply 3 p.m., room 1048, Drakeson Hotel. Well, I tucked the paper under my arm and started for the Drakeson. But if I'd known the heartache and terror that lay behind that innocent appearing ad, I would have run in the opposite direction as fast as my legs could carry me. Suite 1048 was jammed with smart and capable-looking girls, and my courage almost failed me. But I filled out the application blank and waited my turn to be ushered into the presence of the wealthy philanthropist. Finally...
Well, hello, my dear.
How do you do?
Now, let's see. You are Pamela Moore?
Yes, sir.
My name's Mr. Julius. Sit down, my dear, sit down.
Thank you.
Now I see by your application here that you've been active in organizational and publicity work.
I was publicity director for the New York area during the war for one of the war agencies,
mm-hmm.
and later European field director for relief of displaced persons.
Ah, excellent, excellent. Now this position that I have available will require a high degree of, shall we say, public relations know-how. Not in the sense of producing and placing copy, but in the sense of knowing the pitfalls of bad publicity. A preventive job.
Oh, you mean that you would prefer to have no publicity at all rather than bad publicity?
Yes, that's it, my dear. You understand exactly. There will be, of course, other sides to the job, the building of a staff, the handling of human as well as policy problems. In short, you would be my good right arm. For I intend to remain completely anonymous in this new enterprise. I like your background and your appearance. Yes, I think you're the one. You're available at once?
Oh, yes, sir.
Your salary will be $125 a week to start.
Oh, well, that's very generous, I'm sure. Where do I come for work?
Well, for the time being, you stay home. Be available in your apartment every day from 9 to 5. Now, go home and stay there until I telephone.
Hello?
Hello, Pamela, my dear. This is Mr. Julius.
Oh, I was afraid I was never going to hear from you.
Well, I'm quite ready to proceed with our plans now. I want you to rent a suite of offices in a good neighborhood, preferably on Fifth or Madison or Park Avenues. Furnish them in your own good taste. And then we shall discuss the hiring of a general manager for our enterprise.
But, Mr. Julius, how can I rent offices when I know so little about our organization? Why, I don't even know the name.
Did I forget to tell you the name? I'm sorry. Humanity United Against Hunger.
Thank you.
that's the story of my experience, Miss Moore. I've never quite headed up an organization like this one. What did you say the name was?
Humanity United Against Hunger.
Yes. Well, I've never been in the social service field, but I do know advertising, publicity, and I think I could handle the job.
I think you could, too. This is a job of raising funds for the relief of European children, and I think your advertising and promotion experience is what we need. You're hired, Mr. Andrew Gilbert. You are now president of Humanity United Against Hunger.
President? Is that what you said?
We won't have a very large staff, so we all might as well have big titles.
Okay, president it is, but by the way, what's your title?
I'm your secretary.
My secretary? I'm supposed to be head man, but you're my secretary. Actually, you're head man, and I'm your... I don't get it.
Well, it's really very simple. There is a wealthy philanthropist behind all this, and he wants to remain completely anonymous. I'm the only one who will know his identity, and I'll transmit his orders to you. I'm sort of liaison, understand?
I understand that I take orders from my secretary. I don't care much for that.
The salary is good, Andy. You don't mind if I call you Andy?
I don't usually let my secretary call me by my first name. But this seems to be an unusual situation, doesn't it, Miss Moore?
My dear, I want to congratulate you. An excellent personnel job.
I think Mr. Gilbert is going to be extremely valuable, Mr. Julius.
I'm sure of it. You told him nothing of me, of course?
Of course not.
Excellent. You see, I want no credit or public recognition for this humanitarian work we're about to do. The fact that we shall feed hungry mouths is all the satisfaction I require. Now then, here is the cash for operating expenses until public contributions begin to arrive. And here is my personal check for $200. I want to make the first contribution to our great humanitarian fund.
No publicity campaign? Well, you must be crazy. How do you expect to make the public conscious of our organization if we don't feed items to the columnists and radio commentators? How do you expect to get contributions from the people if we don't...
I told you, Andy, we'll do it by direct mail.
Direct mail is okay, but it's not enough. The country's in the middle of a food conservation campaign. The people are eager to send relief to the starving in Europe. We've got to let them know it can be done through us. We have a big public relations job to do, and we can't pinch pennies
it's
if we want to...
It's not a question of funds. We have plenty of money.
Well, then what is it? What in heaven's name is holding things up?
He wants it done quietly, without fanfare.
Yeah, he. Who is this mysterious person who runs our lives? What does he know about it, anyway?
He pays our salaries, Andy.
Yeah. Okay. Direct mail it is.
We'll get results, you'll see. We'll use blow-up pictures of starving children and hollow-eyed mothers, the old heart appeal. We might even show a plump American baby in the foreground, a montage of hunger and misery. Andy, you're not even listening.
Hmm? No, I guess I wasn't, Pamela. I was trying to figure you.
Oh? And what did you decide?
Not much yet. You're pretty, and capable, and cold. What else, I don't know.
Cold?
Yeah. You handle starving kids as if there were so many numbers in a market research report. And you handle me the same way. Oh, don't look so shocked. I know sentiment and business don't mix. But I always figured that sincerity was pretty important. And that's where I can't score you.
You're one of those men who likes to pigeonhole everybody, is that it? Well, perhaps I don't fit in any of your pigeonholes.
Oh, you'll fit one of them, all right. It's just a question of finding the right one in time.
Unless, of course, you get fired.
That boss lady might even help me to find it.
And the curtain comes down on the first act of tonight's play in the little theater off Times Square.
Smoking in the outer lobby, downstairs only, please. Smoking in the outer lobby.
And now between the acts, that important news you've been waiting for.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big bands swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Curtain, second curtain. The First nighters are hurrying down the aisles to their seats. The lights are dimmed, and here's the second act of Help Wanted Female.
Humanity United Against Hunger was launched quietly, without fanfare, just as Mr. Julius wanted. Thousands of four-color leaflets were printed and sent to a general mailing, and the results were almost instantaneous. Money orders, checks, and cash began to pour into the office. Finally, I couldn't resist it any longer, and I took a bundle of money orders and greenbacks into Andrew Gilbert's office and slapped them on his desk. Well, Andy, take a look at the last mail delivery.
Quite a pile of cabbage. One mail?
One mail. $1,258.26. And weren't you the gentleman who said that direct mail leaflets wouldn't pull?
Well, that was before I wrote the leaflets.
Now, if you'll endorse the money orders...
You'll take them to the bank, cash them, and turn the cash over to Mr. Big.
That's the usual procedure, isn't it?
Well, I'm only president of this outfit, and I don't want to appear nosy, Miss Moore, but there are a few things that strike me as rather peculiar. You don't mind my thinking out loud, do you?
Go right ahead.
Well, our organization, under my sterling leadership, has taken in close to $30,000 for relief purposes. And yet we've made no move to arrange for distribution of food or clothing. It seems strange.
I've told you before, that is all being taken care of...
By the mysterious Mr. Big again, yes, of course. We're nothing but money raisers. He takes care of food distribution through a separate organization.
Andy, why are you looking at me like that?
I was just wondering about the identity of this mysterious Mr. Big. I was wondering if it might not even be you.
Excellent mail response, my dear. You're to be congratulated.
I thought you'd be pleased, Mr. Julius. And it gets bigger every day.
Yes, I'm deeply gratified. When I think of all the hungry little mouths this money will feed, my heart brims over with pride.
Mr. Julius, Andrew Gilbert is asking some questions.
Questions? What sort of question?
He keeps wondering about the distribution of relief.
Well, you told him that a separate organization would handle that.
I told him, but he didn't seem satisfied.
Well, you should be able to handle him, my dear. After all, you're a very attractive woman.
Well, Mr. Julius, as a matter of fact...
No matter, my dear. I'm sure you've done your best. So Mr. Gilbert is wondering, huh? Well, perhaps we'll have to do something to satisfy his curiosity.
I left Mr. Julius' old brownstone house on West 83rd Street late that night. As I came down the steps, I saw that the street was deserted. But no, not entirely. Across the street, his hat pulled low over his eyes, a man leaned against the light post. There was something vaguely familiar about him. Then I remembered. He had walked down the street behind me when I came to see Mr. Julius 2 hours before. I turned east toward the subway, my heart pounding. The man crunched a cigarette under his heel and began to walk. Now there was no question. This man was following me.
Hey. Hey there, wait a minute. I want to talk to you.
You! Andy Gilbert, you've been following me.
Who lives in that brownstone house you just left?
I don't see that it's any of your business whom I call
on. Who lives there? Mr. Big? The mysterious head man? Well?
Andy, you're hurting my arm.
Tell me his name. I said tell me.
Please, Andy. It's Mr. Julius. Andy, where are you going?
I'm up to my neck in something, and I intend to find out what it is. I'm going to see this Mr. Julius.
Yes?
Are you Mr. Julius?
That's my name, yes.
You're the man I want to see.
See here, you can't force your way into my apartment.
I'm Andrew Gilbert. President of Humanity United Against Hunger.
Well, now, isn't that a coincidence? You know, Mr. Gilbert, I've been wanting to have a talk with you.
That goes both ways, so let's talk.
Yes, let us do indeed. I hope you won't be offended at what I'm about to say, Mr. Gilbert, but I feel it is my duty to tell you that I have developed some grave doubts concerning your organization.
You have doubts? That's a good one. Why hasn't application been made for a food export license? We've taken in a lot of money. Why hasn't any relief work been done?
My precise questions. Why indeed?
Come now, Mr. Gilbert, you're the president of the organization. Why haven't these steps been taken?
Not just a minute. Our signals are crossed someplace. You're the head man. You've been pocketing all the money.
Whoever in the world told you that?
Miss Pamela Moore. What do you think of that?
Miss Moore? I can't believe it.
Well, it's true. And I'm here for a showdown. Do you hear? A showdown.
Mr. Gilbert, don't get excited, please. We must think this thing through calmly. You see, I'm afraid that we have both been victimized.
All this double talk isn't going to help you, Julius.
No, it's no double talk, my friend. I am almost convinced now that Miss Pamela Moore has been running a confidence game, and we've been taken in. And she seemed so compassionate, so selfless in her dedication to the hungry children of Europe. And I'm afraid that I contributed to your organization without investigating properly.
You contributed? I don't get this.
Yes, it's quite true. I have canceled checks to prove it. She certainly fooled me. My friend, I'm afraid that you and I fell for a pretty face.
But she said... Well, I mean...
Yes, I know it's a blow. I've lost a few $100s, but you, my friend, stand to lose much more. You have been the innocent front for this black conspiracy. But you will have difficulty proving your innocence. You stand to lose perhaps even your freedom. My advice to you is to get out fast. Nella, is this the Federal Bureau of Investigation? My name is Julius, and I would like to talk to the head of the New York office of the FBI. He won't be in until tomorrow afternoon. All right, I'll call in for an appointment. No, it's just that I've been swindled in a clever confidence game, and I have reason to believe that the president of the organization is about to flee.
Lighters are all in their seats, ready for the last act. And there goes the curtain.
I waited outside when Andy went in to see Mr. Julius. My heart still pounding, my head spinning with half-formed fears. When he finally came out, his face was set and grim. Andy! Andy!
You still here?
I waited for you. I was afraid.
Afraid of what I'd find out?
Afraid that something might happen to you.
Something did.
Andy, where are you going?
Someplace where I can think.
Can't I go with you? There's a restaurant over there.
Okay, but I warn you, I'm not going to be very good company.
Andy, you look so tired. What is it?
You want it straight?
Yes, I want it straight.
Mr. Julius informed me that Humanity United Against Hunger is a huge confidence game, and that he and I have been victimized by you.
No. Oh, Andy, no.
He says he has canceled checks to prove that he contributed to the organization under your persuasion. He thinks you've pocketed all the contributions.
No, you don't believe him. Andy.
Any reason why I shouldn't?
No. I guess there isn't. There's no way I can prove what I now know is true.
He makes out a pretty good case against you. But I don't believe him.
Oh, Andy.
Oh, hey, now it's no time for tears.
I'm sorry.
It's a tough spot, boss lady. And we're both in it up to our chins.
I know, and it's my fault. Andy, we'll have to go to the police.
And get locked up?
But we'd tell them the truth.
You think they'd believe it? There's an airtight circumstantial case against us, Pam. A jury wouldn't have to deliberate 5 minutes to reach a verdict. Mr. Julius has fixed himself the perfect racket, and he's 100% in the clear. I'm the president of the organization. I signed the checks. I'm the patsy.
What are we going to do?
Well, I don't know. Now, let's approach it from Julius's angle. He must have figured it a short-term racket because he certainly knew that organizations for foreign relief are licensed by the government and that he'd be investigated sooner or later. That's why the direct mail campaign and nothing else. He wanted to keep it quiet as long as possible.
Oh, I was blind not to see that.
He must figure now that it's about to blow up. He's in the clear, so he'll probably go to the police himself and complain he's been swindled. Yeah. Oh, we don't have much time, baby. There's only one way for us to clear ourselves, and that's the trip up Julia's.
Oh, Andy,
Wait a minute. I've got an idea. It's a long shot, baby, and if it doesn't pay off, we'll cook good. Are you afraid?
I'm scared to death.
When I hold you, like this.
I'm not afraid, Andy. Not now.
Now remember, as far as Julius is concerned, I still think you're the real swindler. You mustn't tip him off that we're onto him. Sound worried, confused. You got it?
Yes.
Good. Now call.
Mr. Julius, this is Pamela Moore.
Yes. What is it?
Well, I told you last night that Mr. Gilbert was acting strangely. I hate to say this, but I think he's getting ready to run out of town.
You don't say. What makes you think so, my dear?
Well, I heard him make reservations for this afternoon's 20th Century.
The 20th Century, huh?
Yes.
That does look bad.
But that isn't all. We had a record mail today, and he has with him $5,000 of the organization's fund.
He has what? I told you to never let him handle the money.
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Julius, but he insisted on taking the money orders to the bank himself. I couldn't stop him. Shall I call the police?
No, don't do that. They'll have to be notified, but I'll take care of that. Don't do a thing, my dear. I'll take care of Mr. Gilbert properly.
It's done.
Oh, you were swell, baby. Now let's just pray that Mr. Julius bites at the bait.
Is everything all right, sir?
Yes, everything's fine, Porter. Well, I'll be having my dinner in my compartment, so please send the waiter in when it's convenient.
Yes, sir, just as soon as dinner's ready. Anything else you want, just ring the buzzer. Right.
Yes? Come in.
Good evening, Mr. Gilbert.
Well, good evening.
You are surprised to see me, no doubt.
Not at all, Mr. Julius. I rather expected you.
Oh?
Only I didn't expect you to walk in with a gun in your hand.
I've come for the money you were absconding with. Hand it over.
You're a greedy man, Mr. Julius. You don't expect to get away with this.
You're in enough trouble as it is. You're not likely to complain about this misadventure. The money, please.
Then Miss Moore's not the swindler at all. You are. And we've been your victims.
I have been rather clever, don't you think, Mr. Gilbert? I've made close to $40,000 out of this deal in a few months. And there's absolutely nothing to compromise me. And as for you, my friend, the police will never believe your story.
No, they didn't.
You told the police?
Yes. When I realized what a jam I was in, I told them everything.
But they let you go.
Well, not really. They just gave me one chance to prove my innocence. That's what I'm doing at this moment.
What are you talking about?
I counted on your greed to trip you up, Julius. You had 40 grand and were sitting free and clear, but you just couldn't stand the thought of my getting a few dollars that might have gone to you. So you came to get it. And that's where you made your big mistake. A detective has been outside that door listening to everything you said. Okay, Larson, come in.
You double-crossing.
Look out, Larson, he's got a gun. Okay, mister, here it is. All right, Larson, he's your baby from now on.
That's quite a Sunday punch you packed there.
Yes, I've been saving that one for some time. And it couldn't happen to a more deserving man.
Andy! Andy!
Yes, here I am. Everything's okay.
But I heard shots.
Well, Mr. Julius is a better confidence man than he is a marksman.
Oh, Andy.
Hey, you call that thing a handkerchief? Use this one.
Thank you.
Well, the job now, Larson, is to find that money. I must return every cent to the contributors, along with a letter warning them not to give money to any but bona fide charities and relief organizations. Oh, what a pity it had to happen now. When the need is so great and there are so many worthy organizations working for this cause. Well, okay, boss lady?
I'm not boss lady anymore.
Oh, maybe you are now for the first time. I finally have you pigeonholed, you know. Come here, pigeon.
Dramatic premium store for you at the Little Theater off Times Square. It's another original play called Shantyboat Serenade, and the folks who've seen the rehearsals say it'll be one of the top hits of the season. So be sure to tune in next week at this same time for Shantyboat Serenade and meet some of the funniest and most fascinating people you've ever met in a play. And now we move out of the theater and into the street.
Here's your cab, Mr. Fursnyder.
Thank you. Good night. The Fursnyder program comes to you over CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From January of 1948, it's been the Fursnyder program with Help Wanted Female. That's all we have time for on this rendition of Yesteryear, but we'll make it a date to return again next week at the same time for more of the best of the golden age of radio, right here on Yesteryear. Till then, I'm Craig Roberts. So long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. Comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.
SRDB San Francisco, where the big bands swing.